Chapter 25. Our Mother in Israel. All the people need to love and adopt Christian Science is a true sense of its founder. In proportion as they have found it, will our cause advance. Mary Baker Eddy, 1905. Communion season in Boston in the summer of 1905 was a good deal quieter than it had been in previous years, with a greatly reduced number of visitors from other states. The leader's message, Miscellany, page 279, sent to the annual meeting of her church on Tuesday, June 13th, reflected an issue that was dominating the news of the day. To my church, dearly beloved, I request that every member of the Mother Church of Christ Scientist in Boston pray each day for the amicable settlement of the war between Russia and Japan, and pray that God bless that great nation and those islands of the sea with peace and prosperity. The 3-year term of the readers of the Mother Church had ended, and the names of the new readers were announced: William D. McCracken, first reader, and Mrs. Laura Conant, second reader. The position that Mr. McCracken would vacate when he moved to Boston, Committee on Publication for New York, was filled by Mr. Cornell Wilson. The retiring first reader of the Mother Church, Professor Herman Herring, was requested by Mrs. Eddy to become first reader for the Concord Church. Though the meetings during Communion Week in 1905 were considerably smaller than in former years, there were still many Christian Scientists from many different locations that attended the Wednesday evening meetings of both the Mother Church and the Concord Church. A testimony given by one of these visitors at the Concord Church that Wednesday evening, June 14th, was of the utmost interest to all. It was given by the wife of General C.C. Allen of Los Angeles, California. Mrs. Allen was a member of Second Church Los Angeles and spoke substantially as follows. 2 years ago, I had a man come to my house to repair some window shades in the parlor. When he had finished his work, I asked him to come to my study. I left him in my room for a time, and when I returned, he said, quote, "I see that you are a Christian Scientist," end quote, because he saw my literature in the room. Then he said, quote, "I was healed by the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, Mrs. Mary Baker Eddy," end quote. I said, quote, "I want you to tell me all about it," end quote. Then he gave me these facts. About 18 years ago, while living in Boston, I fell from the third story of a building on which I was working to the pavement. My leg was broken in 3 places. I was taken to a hospital where they tried to help me. They said that the leg was so bad that it would have to be amputated. I said, "I would rather die." They permitted it to heal as best it might. And as a result, I had to wear an iron shoe, 8 or 9 inches high. I was called to Mrs. Eddy's home on Commonwealth Avenue in Boston to do some light work. Mrs. Eddy came into the room where I was busy and, observing my condition, kindly remarked, "I suppose you expect to get out of this sometime." I answered, "No, all that can be done for me has been done, and I can now manage to get around with a cane." Mrs. Eddy said, "Sit down and I will treat you." When she finished the treatment, she said, "You go home and take off that iron shoe and give your leg a chance to straighten out." I went home and did as I was told. And now I am so well that so far as I know, one leg is as good as the other. The discoverer and founder who never ceased such immediate proofs of the truth and practicability of her great discovery was little understood and often gossiped about by those nearest to her. On this same June 14th, she said in a letter to her editor, Archibald McClellan, quote, "What you may hear of me can give you little idea of what you should know or what is true of me," end quote. What he should know and what is true of the discoverer and founder of Christian Science is what every Christian Scientist should know, that Mary Baker Eddy is God's chosen witness and just as much the manifestation of the Christ as is her brother, Jesus. Jesus' revelation to John was not fulfilled until the advent of Mary Baker Eddy. And Jesus rejoiced to see her day, quote, "And he saw it and was glad," end quote. The leader tried repeatedly to give this message to her students, but they were dull of hearing, so very often her words were not unlike those of Jesus. John 8, "I honor my Father, and ye do dishonor me. If I honor myself, my honor is nothing. It is my Father that honoreth me, of whom ye say that he is your God. Yet ye have not known him, but I know him. And if I should say, I know him not, I shall be a liar like unto you. But I know him and keep his saying." Laura Sargent was one of the very few students who faithfully served the leader year after year, who anguished when Mrs. Eddy anguished, and rejoiced when she rejoiced. One day in June, Laura had cause for rejoicing. Mary Beecher Longyear had been invited to Pleasant View, where she enjoyed an hour's visit with Mrs. Eddy, which the leader also enjoyed, for this student never brought her problems, nor came asking favors. Following the visit, Laura said to Mrs. Longyear, quote, "What in the world were you talking about that made Mother laugh so heartily? I haven't heard her laugh like that since I don't know when," end quote. Another student who faithfully served, obeyed, and followed her leader was Augusta Stetson. A June 14th letter to Augusta said, "I am in great need of summer suits of clothing, two dresses, and two tea jackets. Will you send me samples for these? Oh, how good you are to me. What can I do to pay you? Tell me, dearest one. You are all the student that I can depend upon to clothe me, and inasmuch as you have done it to me, ye have done it unto the Father," said Jesus. In June of 1905, Mrs. Eddy became the recipient of the first copy, numbered number one, of the Book of the Presidents, quote, "a rare volume which has received the highest praise," end quote. This collection of biographies of presidents included a few other outstanding Americans, four of whom were women, one of whom was Mary Baker Eddy. The leader had commissioned Edward Everett Norwood to make the arrangements for the inclusion of the requested Christian Science manuscripts. In this capacity, he had had a confrontation with the editor, Congressman Charles H. Grosvenor from Ohio, in which he had had to defend Mrs. Eddy most vigorously. When Mrs. Eddy learned of it, she sent Mr. Norwood a $20 gold piece with this note: "Please accept this symbol of my thanks to you for obedience to Golden Rule and great kindness to me." The heirloom edition of 1,000 copies at $1,000 each was offered to 1,000 specially selected, quote, "representative citizens of the United States of America who stand at the head of their respective vocations," end quote. The Boston Herald of June 26th stated, "The place and importance accorded to Mrs. Eddy is in full keeping with the distinguished character of this great work. Accompanying her written history is a beautiful engraved portrait. There are also fine photogravures of her present home estate, Pleasant View, her former home in Lynn, where she wrote the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health, First Church of Christ Scientist of Concord, New Hampshire, Mrs. Eddy's munificent gift to the Concord Scientists, and Mrs. Eddy's house on Commonwealth Avenue in Boston." The biography of Mrs. Eddy is a just and discriminating article by Judge Septimus J. Hanna. The special feature of this great work is the remarkable letter by the discoverer and founder of Christian Science. In this letter, Mrs. Eddy, in a few clear statements, presents the fundamentals of Christian Science in a way as convincing as it is forceful. The distinguished place accorded to Mrs. Eddy is another of the many evidences of the widening sphere of her spiritual ministry, and emphasizes the patent fact of her growing influence among the intelligent and cultured classes of this and foreign lands. The few clear statements in Mrs. Eddy's brief letter, which she had written September 17, 1904, said, "Upheld by divine love, man can make himself perfect, but he must not attempt this too rapidly with his neighbor. To so live as to keep consciousness in constant relation to God is to individualize infinite power, and this is Christian Science." On the 27th of June, quote, "a spiritual foresight of the nation's drama presented itself," end quote, "to our leader's consciousness. She saw that the United States of America, which had always stood alone, was being manipulated to get involved in international affairs, the entangling alliances of which the father of our country, George Washington, had warned us to beware. Immediately, she wrote to the Israelites, her children, a word of guidance, Miscellany, page 280, which was published in the next issue of the Sentinel. Quote, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord," end quote. "I now request that the members of my church cease special prayer for the peace of nations, and cease in full faith that God does not hear our prayers only because of oft-speaking, but that he will bless all the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand, nor say unto him, What doest thou? Out of his allness he must bless all, with his own truth and love. This request evoked a great deal of comment from the public press and caused Mrs. Eddy to send, quote, an explanation, end quote, miscellany, page 280, to the Boston Herald, which appeared in that paper on July 13th. In her explanation, she stated that, quote, a spiritual foresight awakened a wiser want, even to know how to pray, end quote. Jesus' foresight caused him to weep over Jerusalem, and Mrs. Eddy's foresight caused her to weep for America. But she also taught her students how to combat the wickedness that caused the downfall of Jerusalem, the same wickedness that was plotting the downfall of America. When Jesus wept over Jerusalem, he said, quote, if thou hadst known the things which belong unto thy peace, but now they are hid from thine eyes, end quote. If they had only understood peace. Was not this the same thing Jeremiah saw when he said, quote, they have healed also the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace, end quote. On July 16th, Mrs. Eddy gave a new watch prayer to the students in her home. Beloved students at Pleasant View, handle electricity of mortal mind. Know our cynical poison, no belief of nerves. Love governs all. One mind, one truth. God is all in all. Jesus knew the hour of temptation and wept. But he also knew the power of love supreme over all the errors of sense. No lie stands in the presence of truth. No theosophy, black magic. No destructive electricity. Quote, he commanded and it stood fast. End quote. God, good is all. Take this up every morning and evening until I tell you to change your prayers. Events of the ensuing few weeks give a fuller explanation of Mrs. Eddy's foresight. The Treaty of Portsmouth was signed on August 5th in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. The people rejoiced at the announcement of peace, and the press around the world lauded President Theodore Roosevelt for his part in the negotiations. Was God's chosen witness, the founder of Christian Science, the only one who saw that this was an abrogation of our United States Constitution? When the Boston Globe requested a statement from her, she responded with a message, miscellany, page 281, which was very graciously worded. But the pith of it was, the Treaty of Portsmouth is not an executive power. I believe strictly in the Monroe Doctrine, in our Constitution, and in the laws of God. Mr. Carpenter was the secretary who transmitted this message one hot summer evening. I can recall one hot August night going down into the city to telephone a newspaper article to Alfred Farlow, in order that it might appear in the Boston Globe the next day. The article was written by Mrs. Eddy in answer to a request for her to issue some pronouncement on the establishment of peace in the war between Russia and Japan. Mrs. Eddy permitted no telephones at Pleasant View, so all phone calls had to be made from public phones in Concord. No one complained about this inconvenience because they knew how much it meant to Mrs. Eddy's peace of mind. Mr. Carpenter evaluated it in this way. When a spiritual leader reaches the point where he or she recognizes that the outpouring of spiritual thought is of the utmost importance to the world, higher than any demand the world might claim to have, then anything that might interrupt that continuity of spiritual thought is something to be avoided, if possible. Mrs. Eddy knew that a telephone could easily become the medium through which a connection might be established with many whose thought would be barred from the home through all other channels. Barring mortal mind's entrance by telephone was but one small effort toward making Pleasant View the heaven on earth the leader knew as present reality. Henry David Thoreau had caught glorious glimpses of this spiritual reality. He wrote in his journal on May 23, 1854, "There was a time when the beauty and the music were all within, and I sat and listened to my thoughts, and there was a song in them. I sat and listened by the hour to a positive, though faint and distant music, not sung by any bird, nor vibrating any earthly harp. When you walked with a joy which knew not its own origin, when you were an organ of which the world was but one poor broken pipe, I lay on the rocks, foundered like a harp on the seashore, that knows not how it is dealt with. You sat on the earth, as on a raft, listening to music that was not of the earth, but which ruled and arranged it. This music and joy, this beauty of holiness, were ever a part of the life of God's chosen witness. She spent all her years endeavoring to open men's eyes to the present reality of this omniscient power. The discord among Christian Scientists over the music for her hymns had caused the leader to write in her message for 1900, quote, "Once I was passionately fond of material music, but jarring elements among musicians weaned me from this love and wedded me to spiritual music, the music of soul." End quote. She predicted to Mr. Carpenter that the time would come when man would not listen to music if the thought of the musician was sensual or hateful, for it would be jarring to those who are advancing spiritually. She also told Mr. Carpenter a little but very little about, quote, spiritual music, the music of soul, end quote, when she told him that there were times in the early morning and sometimes in the night when she was awakened by strains of beautiful music, which the human ear could not hear.